Well, this is the news, according to me. That's the way it goes. It's Tuesday. There wasn't a show yesterday. For those of you who are looking for the yesterday show, there wasn't one. I got up. Well, it's Tuesday, October 8th. Let's just go here. 8:42 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am in the home studio here at my home, not at the Worldwide Headquarters. Sometime this week, there will be a report from the Worldwide Headquarters because I will be here most of the week. At least that's the plan at this point. Now, I wanted to talk about this. I didn't have a show yesterday. Man, there's so many things on the plate to talk about. So much has been going on the last week. I knew this was going to be a busy month, but it's just ramping up. And it's not even, we're hardly even into it. Yesterday, I didn't get up early enough is what happened. But when I did get up, I had a lot to do yesterday. I had to move the boat because the boat has to come out of the water. So it's about a 6-hour sail up to where I take the boat out. So I had to do that. That was just such drudgery. It turned out to be a pretty good day. It was a little bit lumpy out there, but it turned out to be a pretty good sailing day. We were hitting 6-7 knots most of the way, at least half the time. It's a monohull, so it's, you know, when it's hull speed, I think it's 7.4. So needless to say, it was bumping right up there. Right up where it needed to be for the fun factor. So, yes. So what's going on? So I looked at my statistics yesterday. I just happened to take a look at them. And I don't know what happened. For last Friday's show, was it the 8th, whatever that was. Whatever that was. Last Friday. Today's the 8th. It was the 5th, I guess it was. I don't know what happened. It was a very short show. Now maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe keeping the show down to like 10 minutes is a big deal. Maybe my show would get out there more. I don't know if it gets promoted more by somebody. I don't know what people look at it and say, oh, it's a 10-minute show. I'll listen to that real quick. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. People don't want to download a 1-hour show. That's possible. I look at a lot of 1-hour videos. A lot of times I put them on watch later because I don't, on my watch later list, I'll wait till I'm sitting in an airport or downloading to an air, you know, to something so I can watch them on an airplane or something. I just don't, or on a long drive. But I always listen to all my other short ones first. And I put the long ones on later. In fact, I do that at night as well. I'll put on a playlist. I'll put a queue up a bunch of videos, listen to a bunch of stuff. And usually it's the 5 or 10 minute ones I put on first. And then the long one I put on last. So that way, if I fall asleep, I can just play it later, go back and play it later. So anyway, my numbers were ridiculous. I don't know what happened. They were, let's see, what would it be? It was 1,000%, 100 times. Is that right? 10 times more. 10 times more listeners last Friday than normal. It was basically off the chart. It made all the other numbers look like nothing. It's like the hockey stick. Very weird, very strange. I don't understand that. I don't think it was the title. I had, you know, J.D. Vance was in the title. I'm not sure what that was all about. I don't know. But I have in my cup chai with cinnamon creamer. I almost had, I think I left my, I had some coconut cream creamer on the boat. I believe I accidentally left it there. And I have what's left of the last of my homemade sweet tea with peaches in it. In my backup cup, I'll probably have to, it's a little bit watered down because of the too much ice in there, but actually it's probably, second one's better because I just put the ice in there. Sometimes the water, put the ice on the top and it melts a little bit, and the first one's a little watered. Anyway, I have to have a very discriminating palate for that. I've been noticing a trend. Well, first of all, the left is on fire, folks. They are out of control. Kamala finally does a serious interview. This guy actually asks some good questions and didn't let her skate on a few of them. And I can't remember the guy's name now. I didn't actually watch the interview. I just assumed it was going to be the same old kind of crap. She's going on all these easy. She's going on The View. She did some kind of interview. They're calling this stuff interviews. She talked about the, she went on this one show called something Daddy something. It's a perverted show. It's about, some kind of a podcast talking about reproductive rights. I was trying to remember that term the other day. Birth control rights, whatever. It's called reproductive rights. Abortion. It's abortion. Not calling it abortion anymore. I'm calling it reproductive rights. They continue to claim that the Trump administration wants to outlaw IVF. Now, I don't know if that's a part of the 2024 thing. I don't know what that's all about. Trump came out months, if not, almost a year ago. It's a long time ago. Seems like a year ago. And talked about federal funding for IVF to make insurance have to pay for IVF. That's a big deal. We have had experience with that in our family, in our childless family. And I've got to tell you, it was a major strain on our family financially. And relationally as well. Let's be right up front with that. Anytime you have financial stress in a marriage, any kind of relationship, it is a big deal. And it's, you don't realize, but the Bible talks a lot about finances and wealth and everything else. It talks about a lot about that kind of thing and managing it and how you manage your life and how you manage your wealth. It's all part of the Jewish culture, which is why people tend to think that Jewish people, they have all this stuff about Jewish people being whatever, financially, all kinds of incorrect stigma that goes with that. Stereotypes. It's not true. It's just they're biblical principles. Now, there are some that take advantage of it, don't get me wrong. Just like there are in any belief system anybody out there. And many of them are within leaders in organizations as well. I mean, they can be leaders of certain religious organizations and take advantage of certain things, and they pile on guilt trips and all kinds of things about giving. And I got to tell you, it is very freeing when you get away from that. I will never be guilted into giving again. That's not going to happen. If when I'm at the checkout and they say, "Well, you want to round up for such and such?" No, thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for asking, but no. And I'm not rude about it. I just, no. And it's amazing how they treat you after that. Yeah, you want to look at my bank account and see how much money I give to people? But I give directly to people. You just talk about some organization. You want to round up for Feed the Kids? No, I don't know what that. I've never heard of that organization. I don't know. I've heard of Feed the Children. I've Is that the same organization, or is this just something else under the covers of, you know, just there's an organizations out there that do this kind of managing. And how do I know how much of that money is actually going there? How many kids are actually going to get fed? I'd rather take my money and go out and buy a kid some lunch that I know is hungry. Compassion International does a good job, by the way. We're part of that. Real kids. You can go and visit your kids if you want. The kids that you sponsor through the program. And it's very interesting. It's right. But anyway, the this idea that you know you could be guilted into giving. Anyway, a lot to get into. I'm going down a bunny trail here real quick. I'm gonna try to back off from that. A couple things I want to talk about. One is this whole thing of speech. The Kamala has been, she's on a tear to go through these interviews now. All of a sudden she's doing a whole bunch of interviews. Some people are saying, well, it's just strategy, because in the last three months he hasn't done any interviews almost at all. And now she's getting into this thing where she's doing six interviews in like 3 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever. And I don't think he's going to do any more actual interviews with any journalists. This one particular, I think was it CBS or ABC? Actually, he was asking her tough questions. And the answers were not adequate. And he actually came back on her a couple of times and asked her the question again. And he said, but this is, how do you do that? You know, you can't just do that. And she would go into this little spiel. Many times it didn't mean anything. Now, so she also got caught last week. I think it was just in the last week. I don't think I've talked about it, where she, the teleprompter broke. She got lost. I'll play some of the audio of this, hopefully, if I get some audio clips, because it is horrendous what ends up happening to her voice. And I'll talk about, today I'm going to talk a lot about voice and speech and recognition and tone, inflection, all those kinds of things that I find very fascinating. Because in my line of work, it tends to be important. You wouldn't know it by the way I talk on here. Half the time I'm stumbling over myself, especially this morning, it seems to be. But there's just so much to talk about, and I just feel like I'm ready to just talk about everything all at once. I'm not talking about anything at all. She got caught in this situation where she had this, and her tone was just ridiculous. It was 32, that Magic Johnson's number, 32 days. So here we are, 32 days. Yep. Teleprompter's broke. We got a lot to do. She claims she's an underdog. Now this, I think what is happening, all the fun and sun and fun of the new candidate all this hype, glitter and glitz of the new candidate, I think has fallen by the wayside. They realize, oh, this is not any better. They realize Donald Trump is making, I personally believe, there's a couple things that I think have happened with the Trump campaign. Now, I'm not a Trump fanatic, but I just, there's some certain things about the Trump movement that I think are important in our country. And I think Elon Musk put his finger on some of that. I think some people are recognizing some of this stuff. And even though he's not the most wonderful person in the world, he's just the right guy he's the guy for right now. He's a non-establishment guy. And that is what we need right now in this country. And I think what is happening in the Trump campaign here is all this groundwork that they've laid, all the tough interviews. I mean, there have been some tough, Lex Fiedman, some of these people that have gone, Vince Vaughn, whatever the guy's name is. All the podcasts that he's gone on, the different interviews he's had, the different things he's done, the places he's gone to have rallies. He went back to Butler County the other day in Pennsylvania, and it was a rock star event. Tens of thousands of people showed up for this thing, and it was just one home run after another. Elon Musk spoke. Of course, J.D. Vance spoke. All these people. It's just one thing after another. And I think that J.D. Vance. So there's all of that, all this groundwork that he's done, where he's gone out there and actually had talks with people who are borderline, but they're thinkers. These people are thinkers. They're deliberate in what they do. These people who have successful podcasts. Of course, Joe Rogan's not going to have him on, which I think, because I'm not going to help him. I don't want to do anything to help him. Oh, so having him on your podcast would help him, because why? Why would it help him? If I had a podcast, and I would gladly like to interview Kamala Harris. Do I think it would help her? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You think I'm going to be easy on her? You think I'm going to be anything but asking her serious, tough questions? Do you think I would be easy on Donald Trump? I'm going to ask him tough questions too. I got a few tough questions for the guy. And I'm not going to be mean about it. I'm just going to ask tough questions, and I'm not going to back down. I'll be cordial, pleasant, polite. You're a guest in my home here. I would be happy to have you. But you think it's going to be a milquetoast interview. You got another thing coming. There will be serious questions, and there need to be some serious answers and not platitudes. And
I was raised in a middle-class family. So I was raised in a middle-class family.
Yeah, that ain't going to happen. Because we got all day. I'll let you filibuster for a little bit, but that's, you know. So, I don't know. I think that all the groundwork is, now people say that, you know, vice presidential candidates don't matter, and I think it does. In this case, it absolutely does, because we have let's face it, I think there's something that's very settling in most people's hearts if they realize that the number two guy is not some wacko. If something does happen to Donald Trump, because he's a high risk, this guy, some people are going to try to kill this guy. I mean, this is going to be, you better, might as well haul him around in a tank, because there's just too many people trying to get to the guy. Day one, they're going to try to kill him, even though he hasn't, you know, done anything yet, because they made him out to be such a monster. Ridiculous. Now, Elon Musk actually made the comment that, you know, he's all in with Trump, and he realizes he's beyond the, you know, he's crossed the Rubicon here. He's going to be in prison. They're going to arrest him, because they're already after him. They're trying to arrest him now, trying to criminalize him now. And he realizes that if anything happens where Trump doesn't win this election, Elon knows that him and his family, you know, he's probably going to be persecuted the rest of his life. He's going to be imprisoned and jailed and everything else. So I think all this groundwork and all these people, you know, RFK Jr., all these people that are on board with this whole thing, they're wising up and realizing, hey, we've got to stop this crap. This is not good. It's all identity politics. And when you hear these guys talk about, I'm voting for Kamala, she's going to be the first female president, it's going to be great to have a female president. It's time for a female president. Jesse Ventura. I'm brain dead. I'm brain dead now, but I still keep talking. I still keep talking because I'm brain dead. I think I'm going to vote for Kamala just because, you know, I want to see how, I want to see a female president in my lifetime. I'm not going to see, there's not many elections left for me. I can't do a very, very good imitation of him. It's just, all based on the fact that she's a female, supposedly a female of color. She's Indian, she's black, she's all these things, Ben Stiller would say. So, that's a reason to be president, I guess. Nothing about policy, nothing about how she's going to change anything or make anything better. Lead us into the future here with us, with our country, you know, establish some kind of... It's they're out of their minds, folks. These people are just nuts. And I think that they're realizing that after all of their hype, after all, everything that they've done to get this lady over the goalposts of... Now, one of the questions this guy asked in this interview was the process. You know, so Joe Biden decided to step down. There was no process. There was no primary. You just stepped in and usurped it. And it's just kind of... She said, well, Joe Biden, and then she went off on this long explanation of why Joe Biden decided to do what he did, and blah, blah, blah. And it was very obvious that wasn't an answer, because there is no answer. The only answer is there was a coup. They bullied Joe Biden to step down against his will. This wasn't his choice. Well, it was his choice, but that's like holding somebody's baby over a cliff and saying, hey, you want to go ahead and buy me lunch? Yeah, I'll buy you lunch. I mean, you have a choice. Not much of a choice. Guess I'm buying you lunch. I have my baby back. I want my baby back. So that the crazy part of this is that now they realize they're still losing. The polls are not good here. And I know their inside polls are even worse than what we're seeing on most of the typical polls that are out there. They understand what's going on with these polls. And they're pulling from polls that are outliers, the things that are, oh, she's still up. She's doing well, because they want to have a positive image on this whole thing, because that's that way people keep giving and they keep supporting her. But that's not what's happening here. They know full well that Donald Trump is the betting the ornery cat is down here now. The betting numbers are over 70% now that Trump's going to win. And my concern, my big concern, is the time between the election and January 20th. Now, Joe Biden keeps saying there won't, you know, if he loses, there's not going to be, it's not going to be a peaceful transfer. It's not going to be peaceful because there's going to be protests. Yeah, there have never been protests other than January 6th. They've never burned down cities and had riots. How many days? Remember during the inauguration in 2017, in January 20th, after Trump won the election, there was nonstop protests around the Capitol building. It was a mess. You had all kinds of Hollywood people there, entertainers there, making all kinds of statements. I have thought an awful lot about wearing other little pink hats and all the stuff that they were doing. I don't understand how they get off with this idea that all of a sudden they lose an election, the Republicans lose an election, and all of a sudden there's riots everywhere. It's not going to happen. All right, this cat's becoming very ornery here. But that's what they're saying. Oh, the right is going to get, the GOP, these MAGA people are going to get violent. They lose this election. Well, maybe they will. I don't know, but I doubt it. That's not the typical Republican response to anything. The left does that. The one time they do it, it's the worst thing since Pearl Harbor. It's the worst thing since the Civil War. And even that was just a protest that we got out of control. There were some bad actors. Many of them were confidential sources. They're federal agents. They're just contracted. So what we have, what I believe is happening here is the left and the serious journalists that are out there who are saying, hey, look, she's not winning, and we need to confront them about some of this stuff because this isn't working. And they're basically hiding her in the basement right in front of our faces. They're basically saying, okay, we're just going to have you do softball interview stuff, keep you on the teleprompter, keep the hype going. You know, keep the fun going, keep the joy going with all this stuff. Everybody knows that the vice presidential debate swung towards J.D. Vance. Everybody knows that. Even people on the left know that. They're trying to spin it, trying to spin everything. Well, he's just lying. He's avoiding questions, blah, 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 blah. It was very obvious. Now, like I said, Walz is a likable guy. I can see how he makes it in politics. But his policies are absolutely horrendous and horrible. He governs from a far left radical ideas. But I can understand how, because, you know, he comes out, he does the whole thing. It's all an act. He practices how he's going to walk around on stage. When there's nobody you got these weird pictures of him, like, smiling, waving his arms, doing his thing. He's got this kind of an energy. This body language expert kind of analyzed him coming out on stage in this one particular play. I think it was actually a ball field. He was coming out. He's waving. He's pointing. Like, he's pointing at people he sees that he recognizes. It is always so fake. Hillary Clinton did the same thing, but she was very good at it. She would point at someone in the audience and go, oh, hey, glad to see you here. Oh, look at all these people that I know. Oh, no, there's Bobby Joe. Look at those Bobby Joe. Hey, Bobby Joe. She has no idea who's in that audience. She's not seeing people she recognizes. It's all fake. And they practice this stuff. There's a video of Walz, empty stage. They just had the stage set up for this one rally they were going to. He walks out, does his little dance, points, waves, does all this stuff. Then he walks over to another spot, points, waves. And of course, the elbow of, you'll see him give an elbow to their constituent. You know, he'll walk out with Kamala. He's like elbows her, points at somebody. Oh, hey, look, there's that person. Look over there. Oh, waving. All this phony stuff. It's phony. It's fake. It's just to get the energy. Just that kind of stuff just rubs me the wrong way. I guess because I can see it. Maybe people can't see it. They just think it's oh, look, they're just coming out and say, oh, look at the hype. Oh, look, everybody's all excited about it. Oh, everybody's all, I want to join. I want to be part of that because everybody's having fun. No, that's fake and phony, and it's nothing but a show. It's political theater. And how people don't recognize that is just amazing. I guess maybe I'm just an old fuddy-duddy old man. Well, it's all fake and phony. Whatever. That's probably part of it. But I just can't stand it. I can't stomach that. I see it happen, folks. I see it happen in some of these mega churches. You know, the worship leaders out in the back in the green room before worship time, chewing out the members of the team. And they come out on stage and he's acting like, oh, everything's great. This is great. Oh, look at that. Yeah. This happened to me one time. I was at a church, mega church. Not a mega church. In this area, it was a big church. Had four services. Had a Saturday night service and three Sunday morning services. on Saturday night, we come in. We'd usually come in on Thursdays to practice. Saturday, we come in and practice before the evening service on Saturday. The Saturday evening service didn't go all that well. We went back into the green room. And we got chewed out by the worship leader. And the worship leader was like this 20-year-old, 19-year-old kid. Which was the only reason I gave him any grace. If he'd have been a mature individual, I probably would have walked out of that church and never came back. But he chewed us all out. Never apologized, by the way. Has never apologized for what he said. Chewed us out. Now, I was the drummer. Never said a word to me, but he chewed everybody else out. I think he knew better than to say anything to me. Because I would have called him out right then and there. And he knows I would have because I had done it before. And I almost said something to him at the moment. But I was hoping. I mean, there was a lot of... He was older than everybody else on the team. There was only one person younger than him on the team. The pastor's daughter. And I was so appalled that I really thought about not even coming back the next morning. I almost didn't. I almost just did, just not, without even a phone call or nothing, just not showing up. And I got there, and I talked to one of the people who he was primarily chewing out, the bass player. I asked him how I felt about things. Nobody talked about it the night before. So the next morning, I said, "How did you feel about what happened last night after the service?" He said, "I almost didn't come back this morning." I said, "Well, it would have been me and you both probably almost didn't come back this morning." And I said, I happen to know there was two others that almost didn't come back this morning as well. I think it would have said a lot if none of us would have come back that morning. I think that's really what we should have done. It would have probably, but I don't know. The kid still is a worship leader today. He now has a family, still leading worship in a church. And of course, what happens in so many situations like this is the person on stage starts to think that they're so important, that they're up there, they're doing this big deal. It's a big deal to be up on stage, and it's because they make more out of it than it really is. It's just, you're just leading some songs. It's not, you know, the important part is that what's going on in the people's hearts in the congregation. It's not what's going on with you. You're leading the bride of Christ. If you're doing something that's bigger than her, well, you get the wrong idea of the reason you're up there. You're going to get in front of the blood-bought bride of Christ, and you're going to tell me that it's all about you and your little show. I'm going down a bunny trail here. It calls for some sweet peach tea there. That's what that calls for. So people on stage, these people who get up there, they start thinking that they've got to put this show on. It's all theater. And I think some of these journalists are realizing, hey, this show is not, it's not making any, it's not getting traction with anybody. Everybody realizes this is phony and fake, and there's no substance here. The numbers are showing, the trends are going the other direction. Why is that? Well, it's because Donald Trump is just out there being himself. He's just a legitimate human being. J.D. Vance, he's just a guy. There's a really good interview. He does this fishing trip with some guys that are, I can't remember what the name of their podcast. I think it's called Ruthless or something like that. I'm not sure what it is. And it is excellent. It's a really good podcast. These guys are just I think they're actually from Michigan. Wisconsin or Michigan, I think. I'm not sure. I think they're from, actually might be from Michigan. They went fishing on the Kalamazoo River. And I guess it was quite the event, and there was some fun. It looked like a fun day on the water. Of course, now afterwards they get this interview going with him talking about this event before they even posted the event. I mean, I don't think they even posted it yet. And it is, you know, he's got some cuss words. He says some things. He doesn't. It's nothing terribly foul. Nothing vulgar. He uses words I wouldn't use. I just don't. It's typical. Yeah, you have to understand. But anyway, but he's a regular dude. He's just a regular guy out fishing, doing his thing. He's a believer. He's a Catholic. You know, he's got that part kind of messed up. But he's got, you know, other than that. but he's out there just chatting with these guys, just having fun. They just kind of lose themselves in the fact that this guy is potentially the vice president, almost, you know, heartbeat away from being the president. But he's relatable. He's a normal human being. He's articulate, smart, congenial, relatable. He's just got a good sense of humor, and yet can speak on the issues very well. I mean, he's polished as a politician, but it's because he's intelligent. Slick is somebody like Gavin Newsom. He's a slick guy. He can come out with one-liners all day long, kind of make you go along with it. He's a Pied Piper. I call him Pied Pipers. Politician. Pied Piper politicians are PPPs. They just kind of get you to come along with it. And Kamala's trying to do that. She'll nod, she'll laugh and kind of, but her laugh is not a, there are people who have what's called a contagious laugh. They can laugh, do something and kind of laugh through it, and you kind of, it's kind of contagious. You kind of start laughing with them. Kamala's laughter is not contagious. It is unsettling. It is a nervous, inappropriate laugh. It does not have, there's no context at all to the laughter. None. It's very strange. It's very weird. And it becomes uncomfortable because it's inappropriate at inappropriate times. Now, I want to talk about speech here for a moment and what I'm noticing in a lot of speech that I'm hearing on the left, especially people like Jean-Claude Pierre. Karine Jean-Pierre, whatever her name is. The White House spokesman. Now, I guess they have elevated her. She got a promotion. I think she is now the chief advisor of the president, of Biden. Chief advisor. A woman who stumbles and stammers through every answer she tries to give anybody. She's the chief advisor to Biden, which I guess doesn't really matter right now who the advisor is. He's not really in charge anyway. We don't really know who is. Biden, I guess, accidentally was out wandering around after he went to the bathroom and stumbled into the press room the other day. First time ever he's gone to the press conference room. And he basically makes a joke out of it. He walks in and he goes, "Oh, here I am. I'm Joe Biden." And they were all like, "Oh, I haven't ever seen you here before. This is, you know, so glad you're here. Oh. Of course, the reason they're so shocked is because he's never been there. Now, he's caught in this difficult situation here where he's trying to give Kamala credibility by saying she's been involved in all of our decisions that we've made. She's always been, we're singing from the same song sheet. She's been involved in all of it. And yet at the same time, she's trying to distance herself from Joe Biden's policies. Well, you know, no, I haven't, you know, this has been Joe Biden's stuff. This hasn't been my stuff. It's been Joe Biden's stuff. Like, you can't blame me for any of this. I'm going to change all of this on day one. Well, day one starts today. You're in charge right now. So day one, here's day one. Now here's the tough part of this. Which I believe this is going to happen. I can't believe for a moment that they're not going to force Joe to step down after the election. They won't do that if she wins. If she wins, they will not force him to step down unless something bad happens to him. Like, you know, heaven forbid, he has some kind of medical condition or something. But, which he has all kinds of medical conditions. They'll keep him on life support until January 20th. Because they want her to be a two-termer. They don't want her to be a one-termer. Once the machine is there and the establishment has her in place, they don't want her, you know, they have to keep all those people there. They'll fight tooth and nail. So what we have then is going to be a situation where if she loses, all bets are off. She has no clout. They need to get her out. Or push her up. I believe they will push her up. They're going to get rid of Joe. They're going to knock him out of office, put her in place so they can say, we have the first female president. And then it's going to be what I call slash and burn politics. This is what I'm concerned about right now. And I'm going to get into that in just a little bit. But I want to talk about this whole speech thing. Karine Jean-Pierre, KJP. Those are my initials, by the way. Her name is my name, too. Whenever we go out, hear all the people shout. John Jacob, Jean Clear, Jean Claude Pierre. I don't know. What happens here is we have all these people asking her questions now, except for the tough questions. But they're starting to ask some questions because they really the people in the media. I think they're seeing the handwriting on the wall here. Hey, look, she's losing. What we better ask her some tough questions. What's going to happen here? But how are you going to do this? We need policies. We need to get stuff out there because people aren't liking her. She's just not likable. That's one of her likability. Her approval rating right now is down like 28%. There was a guy who was doing this stuff the other day saying, you know, Kamala's nobody has ever won an election with a favorability rating of less than 39%. She's at 28. The last elections that were won against opponents, the opponents had 25%. They went back 30 years into elections and looking at stuff, and it's like the statistics show that this is not looking good for Kamala. She's not looking good at all. Nobody's ever won a presidency with 28% favorability. So this is, you know, they're in trouble. And they know it. They're finally starting to take this a little more seriously. They realize that, hey, we better straighten up and act serious and ask some tough questions here because this ain't working. The strategy of Orange Man bad. Donald Trump bad. Donald Trump's a Nazi. Donald Trump's Hitler. We're all going to die if Donald Trump gets elected into office. She's going to fix the economy. She's going to fix all this stuff. Day one, she's going to fix everything. She's going to fix the border. She's not going to fix this whole thing about her. She always throws this in. Everybody says, "Well, we had a bill. We had a comprehensive bill that would have reduced fentanyl." Now what she's saying is they've cut border crossings in half. They've cut all this stuff in half. They cut fentanyl in half. Well, first of all, those are your numbers that you're making up out of nowhere, just like your jobs numbers. Secondly, it's a little, you know, you're the one who quadrupled it. And this guy makes the point when he asked her the question. He was like, you quadrupled the numbers coming across the border. Do you think, you know, that those were your policies? The border's been a problem for a long time. What they want to do, their idea of border reform and solving the problem is, hire more agents to process people. They don't want to slow the border crossings down. They just want more people to process everybody, and then they want more paths to citizenship. Just come on in. Elon Musk made it real clear, very easy to see, that they're bringing these people into swing states. He did the math on all this stuff. He did, in his little speech out in Butler, he was very clear. He goes, this could be our last election that's actually legitimate, because he goes, the swing states, you know, they're taking over the swing states. They're hundreds of thousands of people are coming into these places, and these are, you know, in places where elections are only won by, you know, 10 to 20,000 people. These people are going to primarily vote left, vote for the Democrats. They don't know any better. They think that they need to come here to get all their free stuff, and of course, those are the people who are going to give them the free stuff, according to, you know, the Republicans have had their, the establishment Republicans have been almost as much as problem as it anybody. I want to see everybody be able to afford everything that they want and everything that they need, especially everything that they need to better themselves and be productive. The problem is people aren't productive. They just want to sit there and have the rich pay their fair share. The rich, the top 1%, pay like 50% of the taxes. I think it's, what is it? I think the number, I'm not a financial counselor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a tax advisor. I'm not a geopolitical expert. The main thing I think that we have to realize here is that the top 3 or 4% the top 5% pay 80% of the taxes. What's the fair share? What's fair? How much? What's the percentage? See, the problem is, and they're saying, well, these millionaires, billionaires, these billionaires and corporations aren't corporations. Most corporations, a sub-S corporation or even an LLC is a corporation. And most of those are mom-and-pop shops. The vast majority of the businesses out there are smaller than 30 people employed. They make it sound like it's just these big, you know, GE and all these other companies. But they're the ones giving them tax breaks. They just want more control with the taxes. And they want to make it look like they're taxing the rich to give to the poor. The Robin Hood effect. That's what we're looking for. Yeah, go out and get that money from those people that took all of our money. Well, no, you paid for your iPhone. You paid for this. You paid for that. It was your choice to pay for those things. And now you're vilifying them. That's, oh well. But the speech patterns of Karine Jean-Claude Pierre, she's stammering, stuttering, doing all kinds of manners of repeating themselves. This is what happens so often, and they'll repeat themselves. You'll hear Kamala doing this all the time, and it's a form of what's the word? See, I could just be talking here. I could just be filling in gaps. This is a good, perfect example of this. It's a perfect example. This will be a perfect example, a moment in time where it's a perfect example of the importance of time and how it's spent. Because while I'm just sitting here spending, you know, just spewing out word salad, not really saying anything, just spewing out these words, I'm thinking in the back of my mind, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm fishing for something. But, you know, what they don't realize is these people who are doing this, they're fishing from a very shallow pond with no fish. They have no original thoughts in there. They're looking for an original thought. Please just let an original thought pop in my head. Something that will win this election. And it doesn't happen. It's a way of stalling. It's a stall tactic. It's an avoidance deflection tactic. And they just keep repeating themselves. And you'll hear this constantly in her speech. Anytime she answers a question, she almost always repeats herself. Karine does the same thing. And then she'll stammer a little bit and pretend like she's kind of tripping on her words. And she'll start at the very beginning again. She'll start talking again, same sentence. She does it constantly. It's to kill time. It's a filler thing. She's trying to get through this 1-hour press conference. fill it all up with nothing and go on our way and say, well, I made it through that one. Knock that one out of the park. Razzle and dazzle them with my, you know, she'll say one sentence and it takes her 5 minutes because she's repeating herself so much. Many questions could just be answered with a common yes or no. But no, they can't do that. They have to stammer over themselves and give all kinds of explanations, go off on tangents and who knows where to not even answer the question. I think J.D. Vance was very good at that. They asked him this question about, well, you said all these things about Donald Trump in the past, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. I was wrong. Oh. Uh-oh. You don't have anything else to say? No, I was wrong. I was wrong. Oh. Okay. You don't want to continue on with your, which, no. It's totally disarming. But like, they can't do that. That's not a part of their DNA. They can't understand how you can just do that. Admit that you were wrong about something. Now, I think, you know, Tim Walz tried to do that when he called himself a knucklehead. You know, and I say all this stuff, and at times he said something about, he went off to someplace in Minnesota, some town there, and there's 50 different languages being spoken. Do you 50 different ones? Did you count the 50 different languages? Are there 50 different languages in the world? I mean, just how do you have a community with 50 different languages being spoken? That sounds like chaos. That sounds like Tower of Babel stuff to me. But diversity is our strength. Diversity is not necessarily a strength. Unity is our strength. Now, if you can have unity in the midst of your diversity, a common goal, a common something in common, you can build a coalition. You can be strong. You can move forward. If diversity just in and of itself is strong, how do you quantize that? How do you measure that? There's no metric on the face of the earth that just you can. No. You're wrong about that. That's a stupid statement, first of all. Diversity is our strength. I digress. Folks, it's been a crazy morning here. I do apologize for a shotgun approach. And I do a lot of worship leading. When I lead songs, many times I'll go back and visit a chorus. I'll kind of weave songs together. They call it smashing songs, I guess, now. So that's what the kids are calling it. In the old days, we used to call it weaving because that's what we did. We weaved. We were weavers. And you put these songs together where you bring back choruses. You might do two choruses together and go back and forth from one song to the next. Then you kind of bring back the chorus from the very first song. And at the end, you're just kind of doing choruses. I kind of like to do that. That's kind of the way that's my style. That way, it's kind of this whole experience where all the songs are kind of speaking together. But I've often, in doing that many times, I'm just imagining, okay, what would I do if I were to break out in worship in heaven? What song would I sing? And there's only one place and one. My hope, I guess, is to be able to stand or kneel or whatever. I'm going to fall on my face, whatever I'm going to be doing the first 1,000 years. If I'm going to open my mouth and worship at all, I hope I can explode with every song I know all at the same time. I think that in heaven that may be possible. I don't know. Every song I've ever known, written, sung, I can just, they're all coming out of my mouth at the same time. But if not, that's fine. I kind of feel like sometimes that's where my thoughts are. Maybe that's just the way I'm wired. Sometimes I get on behind a microphone like this and I want to talk and I want to share everything all at once. It's more of a shotgun thing. Just kind of blah. Here are all my thoughts. So I do apologize for those of you who can't, who just get lost in my very first 5 minutes of my show here. So just going to say, that's all I'm going to say about that. So we have tomorrow. There'll be a show tomorrow. Tomorrow will be Wednesday, and there'll be a show probably either tomorrow or Thursday will be a show from the worldwide headquarters. Most likely tomorrow, I'm guessing. Possibly Thursday, but it's going to be one of those two. I'm hoping to be able to get it done tomorrow. I got a lot of stuff to get done at the office, so I'm going to be going into the office tomorrow, possibly Thursday. Probably not Friday, because I got a lot to do on Friday. See how I do. Tomorrow's show will be a little bit late, actually. A little bit later in the day. Hopefully it'll all work out okay. Folks, I want to thank you for listening. God bless. Hope you had a great weekend, and I hope we have a great week ahead of us. And we will continue to pray for our nation, pray for everything going on at this intense, intense time before the election. It is an important election. Get out there and vote, and do your thing. God bless. Have a good day.